comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hey folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. And indeed, we do have listeners all around the planet. And we're delighted to have you. I'm glad you're here. No matter where you are, I'm glad you're here. We're here because you have a right to know. We're here because you matter. NASA's recent moves, you know, over the past 2 or 3 years have been pretty curious. And their missions, pretty curious. As a matter of fact, it should be enough to make at least one eyebrow on even the toughest skeptic rise. Back in 2008, I began reporting to you right here on the Kevin Smith Show about the fact that there appears to be a new space race underway, and the target is the moon. Remember? Now, I've mentioned it several times since then, but I did several shows where we really focused on that and talked about that. That was in 2008. Well, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, there are continuing developments in that space race. It didn't just go away. And we're going to do a little bit of updating tonight, and we're going to be joined by one Mr. James Horak here in just a moment to get his insight and input into it all. You know, as time passes, more pieces of the puzzle surface, and we begin to understand and begin to know a little more than what we did. So hopefully tonight we'll put some of those new pieces out there for you. Now, if you're not yet a member here at the Kevin Smith Show, you can fix that right now. You know, it's always free to listen to the show. Always has been. And I'm amazed when I get email from someone who says, I came across your show and it looked interesting, but you have to pay to listen, and by God, I'm not paying for nothing. Now, you know what amazes me is I always wonder if they just blew out their last remaining gray cell, because right in the middle of the screen it says listen, and right under listen it says free. It's free to listen. But if you're a member, if you join and become a member, you get the limousine ride at lemonade prices. Lots of cool stuff in our members community. And lots of cool people and information. And it's only $7.50 a month. Now, folks, that comes out to 25 cents per day. That's all. That is less than you were paying for school lunch in the second grade. It's absolutely phenomenal. And I don't know of any other place where you can get a value like that. But you can take care of it right now. Just join. And when you do, after you log in, be sure the first thing to do is read the new member info. If you don't do that, you're not going to understand how to watch the show, the live show. It's not difficult, but there is a secret, and for very good reason. We are going to step away for break, and when we come back from this break, we'll be joined by James Horak. right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And as I said at the top of the show, there's some pretty interesting stuff that has developed between, well, in 2008, I began talking to you about this new race to the moon, and I was asking, and you were asking, both when you called in and also in your emails, you were asking, you know, what's the deal with everybody rushing back to the moon? At that time, it had been announced the United States was going to go back to the moon, and Russia said they were going back to the moon, or going to the moon, and we're going to build a base there. We'll talk a little bit about that some in a moment. And China had said they are headed to the moon and going to build a base there by 2020, as a matter of fact. And I think the Russians' plans are that they're going to be on the moon by 2015 or something like that. I may have those dates wrong. No, China is 2024, and Russia says by 2015 they intend to be on the moon with a base. And we were headed back to the moon. And so there was a whole lot of talk about, you know, wonder why, what is it with the moon that everybody's headed there? There have been some developments, and the developments, it's not like they happened last night, folks. They've been happening, and but a period of time has gone by where we can put them together and take a look and at least ask some cogent questions, and not just shooting completely in the dark. And to assist us with that tonight, and to surprise us, as always he does, Mr. James Horak. James, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Kevin. I hope you're having a nice evening.
I'm having a great evening. It's showtime, and when it's showtime, I get to rest.
I know how hard you work on your show.
Well, that's right. You have seen it. You've seen what goes into the production of one. So it's a lot, isn't it?
It doesn't give you much left of your time. I've seen that.
Yeah. But when showtime comes, I get to just sit down and enjoy talking with the guest for a couple of hours, and if we open the phone lines, talking with the audience, and you know, it's kind of a break. It's kind of a 2-hour break where I get to just kind of get away from all the tedium that goes into the production. You and I have talked about the moon face to face, and we've talked about the moon on the air. In fact, we talked about the moon face to face while we were standing in your backyard watching it go across the sky in the wrong position.
Yes.
Yeah, we did that, and that was pretty interesting. And that, what was that, 3 or 4 nights there that it did that?
Yes, and you know, people talk about that, but I think it's becoming increasingly obvious because people are looking and trying to figure out what other people are talking about, discovering unique things themselves.
Well, you know, I honestly have to tell you that if you had called me on the telephone and I had not been standing out there and watching this myself, and you called me on the telephone and said, "Kevin, let me tell you something. I was standing out in the yard last night watching the moon go across the sky, and it was in the wrong place. It went across the sky in the wrong place." You know, I wouldn't think you were lying to me, but I would wonder if maybe you got a little too close to your friend Jim, you know, Beam.
Yeah. Well, in this case, it's Jack.
Oh, yeah, that's the other next door neighbor, Daniels, Mr.
Yes.
Daniels. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that's just the sort of thing, James, that when people hear it, their response is, "Yeah, right." But, you know, I saw it. And you know what started it? what started. Do you remember? I told you I had been getting email from people who were saying that they were watching the moon in the wrong position at night. And so we talked about that and walked out into the backyard to look up, and sure enough, it was in the wrong spot, and it tracked across the sky in the wrong track.
Yes, and that's not hard to tell because it's supposed to be a parallel path with the sun. And if you'll tell people, see for yourself, get a software that gives you a fix on the sky at any time and place, just simply by punching in the date and time and your location, you'll get a fix of the sky how it should look when you go outside and look at night. Mm-hmm. And you'll be surprised how many times things are out of place.
Well, this, even without that software, we looked up and, holy smoke, that's in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was very, very obvious. And it was two or three nights it was like that, and then it seemed to go back to normal. And so, I don't know, it's weird stuff. But you and I have, the point is, talked about the moon on a number of occasions. And we'll talk about it again tonight, both from a sort of scientific/speculative point of view, and perhaps a little bit of the esoteric flavor that you provide us from time to time.
All right.
Right now, up at the moon, there is a mission. Well, several. But this particular mission is called the Grail mission, and it involves twin satellites. And these satellites are mapping the interior of the moon. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this was planned prior to 2008. I have an article right here written prior to 2008, and it actually, I didn't print the date, and I should have, but let's see if it's got it. No, it doesn't have it, but it talks about how the I got this article right off of NASA's website, by the way, nasa.gov. And it talks about how the Grail mission was going to be a support mission. It will enhance and support the U.S. return of human exploration of the moon. And then it goes on to reference another mission that was going to launch in 2000. It said this will launch in 2008. So this article was written prior to 2008 because they're talking about something that was going to launch in 2008. So Grail is not a last-minute thing. However, it was designed, James, to support the return of human exploration of the moon. And what is it doing? Mapping the interior of the moon.
Well, I think one of the things that kind of draws this out, because, this is NASA speak. One of the things that draws this out into perspective is Hoagland's recent mention of engines in the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And which is something I brought up a number of years ago.
As a matter of fact, you brought it up right here on this show.
Yes. They know these engines are there. They've known these engines were there for a long time because these engines have high points and low points, and they make adjustments with engines on Earth to maintain the parity of the orbit of the moon with Earth, because it has a tendency to degrade or either to go out of orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And this, of course, has to be maintained by these engines because the Any astrophysicist worth his salt will tell you the moon is not right for Earth. Its proportions, its the fact that it is inconstant in mass, and that it has these vacillating gravity fields, which are caused by these adjustments of these engines, necessarily, will back that up. So what we're having is an admission of something that they've known about probably for 35 years. They've known of the anomaly of inconstant gravity wave, and so that hasn't really brought it into the public theater because, candid disclosure is not something they're capable of.
Well, now let me tell you something. Since you bring up the fact that it has the inconstant gravity, what did you say, inconstant gravity wave?
Yes, and they've known about know what a gravity wave is, and they've known probably for 20 years.
Yeah, well, let me tell you what. Ladies and gentlemen, do you have any idea by what technology they are mapping the interior of the moon? Perhaps you think it's sonar. It's not. Perhaps you think it's radar. It's not. They're using gravity like you would use radar to map the inside of the moon.
Well, you know, it's not too different from radar imaging. Mm-hmm. But any time that you have a vacillating or changing phenomena, the changes in that phenomena give you signatures, but they also give you definitive prints. And they can use that to decipher profiles within the Earth. And, of course, there's a cavity in the moon. They know that, and they also know a number of other things they're not letting you know that or share with you. They had a mission. They have had bases on the moon and on Mars both, and they had to have had bases, and they had to have teams to compile what was in that book that I talked about that I had and sold to a Norwegian scientist on lunar petrology. Now this book was extensive. And the only way the data in it could have been collected is by manned teams and surveys being run from bases while they were on the moon. Not that they have bases now, but they did. And so what we have here, when I say NASA speak, is they admit enough for you to wonder about where it's leading and what it's about, but not enough for you to actually get a concrete idea about what they're talking of. And that's intended. It's NASA speak or double speak or whatever you want to call it, but it's not candid disclosure.
The pieces of the puzzle that I'm going to throw onto the table tonight appear to show a picture so outrageous that it would either make an absolutely fantastic sci-fi movie or it would make someone say, "You're nuts. That's absolutely nuts." But these are the pieces provided by the data. Now, let me give you an example. I mentioned that NASA scientists had made the statement that the moon rang like a bell. I made that statement on air, and I like to be accurate. We had a caller who called in and asked, "Did NASA scientists say that?" And did they actually say that, or is that just sort of mythology? Well, I'm going to give you the best answer, and we're going to talk about it ringing like a bell, but I'm going to give you the best answer I can here. And I was referring to an article that is on NASA.gov. In this article, it talks about the two times they sent something crashing back down to the moon after having set up seismic sensing equipment. Apollo 12 in 1969, they sent their lunar module crashing into the moon after they had returned to the Apollo command craft back up in orbit around the moon. And it struck with the force of 1 ton of TNT. The shock waves built up to a peak in 8 minutes and continued for nearly an hour. Now, this is from this article. Pay close attention. Then when Apollo 13 went up, as you know, that's the one, you know, where they said, Houston, we have a problem. The very famous Apollo 13. And so they didn't land on the moon. They went around the moon and slingshotted back toward Earth because they were in a severely damaged spacecraft. But what they did is they jettisoned it's actually S4B, but it's in Roman numerals, so most people say the SIVB. It's S4B, and that's part of the spacecraft they no longer needed. So they jettisoned that, and on April the 14th, and at 8:09 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it struck the moon with a force equivalent to 11.5 tons of TNT. It struck 85 miles west-northwest of the site where the Apollo 12 astronauts had set up the seismometer. And this article, ladies and gentlemen, this is where I got it. It's on NASA's website, nasa.gov. This article says, and I quote, scientists on Earth said, quote, the moon rang like a bell. So that's where I got that. However, I also tracked down that it probably came to public attention from a television interview Buzz Aldrin did where he made the statement that it rang like a bell. So some people say, no, the NASA scientists never said it. NASA's website says they did. So, I don't know. Make up your own mind about that. Here's the deal, though. The information, I'm quoting from that article, the information from these two artificial moonquakes led to reconsideration of theories proposed about the lunar interior. Among puzzling features are the rapid buildup to peak and the prolonged reverberations. Nothing comparable happens when objects strike the Earth. Okay, so I read all the comments that the experts made, but that's what's on NASA's website. Now, we're going to come back and talk about the moon ringing like a bell and how that plays into this right after this break.
Listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is, of course, none other than James Horak, and we are discussing the moon. I guess that makes us a couple of lunatics. What do you think?
Well, that's the derivation of lunatic, one who is maddened by the moon.
I'm maddened by the lack of information about the moon.
Well, you don't expect to get any information from NASA, do you?
Well, they accidentally leak it out over time, you know. I mean, they don't watch real carefully, I don't think. Or maybe they do it on purpose, I don't know. Okay, but you remember, don't you? You remember hearing that statement that the moon rang like a bell.
Yeah, and it reminds me of the way in which Mr. Sullivan, the former science editor of New York Times, described what Phobos sounded like when it was hit. And he said exactly the same thing, and that had been passed down through the ranks of NASA. And as science editor of New York Times, he was quite accomplished, and he wrote a book which has a bearing on the moon, as a matter of fact, and has also a bearing on how scientists later on admitted they could detect planets around a star. And, of course, that book was We Are Not Alone. It was published in 1968, and it has things in it that weren't admitted to in official circles for 10 years.
Well, this thing about the moon ringing like a bell, in fact, there were NASA scientists that I've seen on television saying back then that it rang like a bell almost as if it was, and they would pause and say, hollow.
Well, it's more than that, Kevin. It has to have a substructure, a constructed substructure to do that. So what we're talking about is a ship that has, as a matter of deployment, a mineral resource to sustain a civilization while they transit to a new way of life.
Okay. Now, see, that brings up the next piece of this puzzle. We'll come back to the moon ringing like a bell, as if it were hollow. We'll come back to that. Now we're going to move forward. That article that we've been talking about that was, about Grail and that it was planned. They were talking about it before 2008 and that it was planned. Well, it's there now. Grail is up there now. And it is mapping the interior of the moon using gravity like you would normally use radar. It's using gravity waves to map the interior of the moon. And that article said that its purpose was to support the return of manned exploration of the moon. The U.S. plans to put men back on the moon. And so you put the two together. We're going to send men back to the moon. Now, we know now we're not. But back then they were telling us we were. All right, so we're going to send men back to the moon, right? And we're going to send this up as a mission to support the return of manned exploration of the moon. And man is going there, humans are going there, riding on NASA spaceships to get to the moon and explore the moon. That was the plan. Grail is going to support that. How? By mapping the interior. Now, that is pretty telling right there. Okay, now let's move forward to 2008. And we've already dipped a little bit beyond beyond 2008 because we're talking about Grail being there now. But let's go back to 2008. In 2008, China shook up the world by saying that they had a plan to map, listen to this, every inch of the surface of the moon and to exploit vast quantities of helium-3 thought to lie buried in lunar rocks as part of its ambitious space exploration program. Okay, now, you and I have discussed helium-3. And, that's quite a discussion in itself. We may get into that here in a little bit. The point is that helium-3 is very, very important to certain types of devices that we use here on this planet now. Helium-3 is not naturally occurring. It happens as a byproduct of the decay of when they're making nuclear weapons, when they're doing weapons-grade nuclear processing, helium-3 is a byproduct of the decay of that. And I think it's actually a byproduct of the decay of, tritium. So, up until 1988, the United States was processing and making a lot of tritium in order to have its nuclear weapons program. A byproduct of that is helium-3. Helium-3 is critical in these detectors, James, that they use to detect if there's plutonium in, like, a shipment. You know, they have sensors that detect if there's plutonium inside of a truck, you know, or inside of a ship. Well, they have sensors that detect that, and they require helium-3. Well, up until 2007, the annual usage by science of helium-3 was 10,000 liters per year. Between 2007 to 2008, it jumped to 60,000 liters because of these new devices. And they have to have helium-3. But in 1988, we stopped processing tritium. We stopped processing it. So there was no new helium-3 being thrown off of that process. And so they've just been using up the stockpile that we had of helium-3. And in 2008, it was getting really, really serious. Because there was a huge shortage. All right. By 2010, it had reached a critical situation with helium-3, such that the Congress had to go into special meetings and convene a special panel to look into what to do about this, because we needed the helium-3 for many scientific devices, and we were running out. Do you know what the cure for that was?
What's that?
Well, the cure for that was that President Obama authorized one nuclear plant to begin processing tritium again. And so they are once again manufacturing tritium, which is used for nuclear weapons, and the byproduct is helium-3. Okay, but on the moon, it is thought that the entire amount of helium-3 on Earth total is estimated to be 15 tons. And the amount that is estimated to be on the moon is somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 million tons.
Well, the Japanese were concerned. They felt that if they could get their hands on what they're calling helium-3, they could provide their cities with enough power to run for all the electrical needs that they had on a few pounds a year. And so here you have another contradiction. Mm-hmm. Are they trying to exhaust a alternative energy source before it can be applied to better, more constructive, more humanitarian use?
Well, there's some big, big cards being played, and that may be, in fact, one of the cards. But grab a handful of this. China came right out and said, we're going to the moon, and we're going because we want to mine helium-3. All right, now helium-3 also has this use. It can be used in cold fusion. And when you get through using it in cold fusion, there's no radioactive waste left over.
And, well, Kevin, I'll tell you something about helium-3. It isn't helium-3.
No, it has
what
another name.
What they're doing is they're complicating the process of cold fusion so that they can fool people into thinking that it's that's much more difficult to obtain. it's much easier to obtain than having to create a isotope that doesn't exist.
It's called philinum or something like that. It has a name, but it's sort of common name that they call it is helium-3. It's not actually, but it does have a name. And I'm looking for it, but I don't see it. I'll come across it, and when I do, I'll say, "Oh yeah, here it is." Okay, so listen for that, folks. It'll be there. But also, they need it for cold fusion. They need it for quantum computing. All of that development, they say, has been slowed down because we are running out of this helium-3. All right. China comes out in 2008, and they say two things about it. They say, we are going to the moon to mine for helium-3. But they also say, in preparation for that, they are going to map every inch of the moon in high definition 3D.
Well, that'd be a first. If they did that and shared it, you can bet that that's already been done.
Okay, but you can also bet that if the U.S. has a base there, if Russia has a base there, as we've been told that there are both U.S. base, there's a U.S. base, a Russian base, a joint base, and the joint base also has aliens in it. Now, look, that may all just be internet bunk, but we've been told by some pretty serious scientists that that's the case. All right, so let's assume it is. If anybody has a base there, they're not going to want every inch of the moon photographed in high-definition 3D.
Well, they've had bases there. They don't have bases there anymore. If they did, they wouldn't need to send probes out there with orbiters to do what people that are there could do much easier and with much less expense. So here's another contradiction. They've had bases on Mars. The same is true. They're not there anymore. They're not there anymore because there are people that don't appreciate this concept of weaponizing space.
And who are these people? Are they Earth people or are they Martian people?
No, they're off Earth. They're off ETs. Earth.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this with more about the moon. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking with James Horak this evening. And James, before we go any further, I want to correct something that I said. It was only half right. I only gave what I said was right, but it was only half of the story. I left a detail out on the tritium. They began reprocessing, or not reprocessing, but once again began. Processing, manufacturing bomb-grade tritium at one nuclear plant in 2003. So that's before Obama. But Obama, his 2010 budget includes funds for the Tennessee Valley Authority to expand tritium production to a second nuclear plant. So when I said that President Obama authorized the production of tritium, that's true, but they had begun in 2003 to make it again. He has now authorized it to be expanded to a second nuclear plant where they are making tritium and thus helium-3. All right, now this thing, we're just now getting to what got me interested in this, James. You're aware that the Russians and the Chinese just attempted a joint mission to Mars.
Yes.
It's called the Phobos Grunt, G-R-U-N-T. And it was a Russian satellite, Russian spacecraft that was headed over to Mars, and they were going to do all kinds of weird stuff over there, including they were carrying a little hockey puck-sized canister of microbes of some kind. And but on board, piggybacking on this thing, was a Chinese satellite that was going to go into orbit around Mars and begin photographing Mars and sending the photos back to China. Well, it lifted off. Everything was wonderful. It went into orbit. And at the point where it was supposed to fire its engine to leave orbit and head towards Mars, it just went silent.
Yeah.
Okay, mysteriously. But Vladimir Putin has recently, in the past few days, been making noises about he thinks that the problems, recent problems with the Russian space program are sabotage.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the dubious source, Sacha Fowle, wanted to detail before about that before he did, which oddly lends them a little more credit.
Oh, well, yeah. Sacha Fowle, you and I have talked about Sacha Fowle. So, you know, when Sacha Fowle is on target, it's on target, really on target.
Right.
But then sometimes, a lot of times, it's manufactured train loads of BS. But sometimes they're right on target. Okay, now, he's been making noises about he thinks that the problems with the Russian space program are sabotage. I brought the question up here on this show. I asked the question, don't you find it a little odd? Russia can, you know, they got one of the most reliable spacecraft ever built. We're even using it to get back and forth to the space station. And it's one of the most tested, tried, true, reliable spacecraft ever built. The Russians
beautiful
are,
rocket engines.
And Russians are not dumb.
Well, they have, when we were going into minimizing the payloads, the size of the payloads, and developing greater circuitry, microcircuitry, and so forth, they were just building more powerful and more efficient rocket engines. And, you know, if there had been a trade-off between the two, they could have advanced so much more. But, of course, they don't need rockets. This is a cover. And the Russians, I think, have been able to employ the same, let's say, device that we have. I think they probably got some kind of EB hole in the ground over there with those little critters and that they're using their craft.
Well, it could be. But I just, you know, I've said here on the air that I find it strange, and I've asked a question of the audience. Don't you find it strange? The Russians can blast off and go anywhere they want to unless it's Mars.
Well, here's the issue with Chinese or Russian satellites, spy satellites going around Mars, because, you see, they can't be controlled in what they divulge.
Mm-hmm.
And when they start showing what NASA has been lying about all this time, it'll put so much egg on NASA's face that they'll be the laughing stock of the world. They can't stand for that. So I wouldn't doubt that they wouldn't be working with other agencies of the U.S. government, that they would hesitate to sabotage if they had a way of doing it and deniability. that they would do that because...
Well, let me say this, though, and this is important. You know, I've lived all around the world, and I know that the easiest devil in the dust storm to come up with is the U.S. did it.
Oh, yeah. Well,
now, part of that is our fault.
It's a sad thing, but Pax Americana asks for that, doesn't it?
Well, you know, it's our fault because we have been the devil in the dust storm so many times.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of times where we get blamed, our country gets blamed, for something that we really didn't do. And I guess it's kind of like the time my dad spanked me for something my sister did. And once he finally realized that I was telling the truth and that she had done it, he said, well, that's for next time. So,
yeah.
So I guess some of this, you know, blaming us for everything that goes wrong, well, we've sort of earned it. And, well, if we're innocent on one or two or ten, well, this is for next time. Because apparently there'll be a next time. All right, so anyway, I'm not saying that we sabotaged that. I'm saying that's what got my interest in looking at this. Okay?
Sure.
Now, how do they know that there's between 1 and 5 million tons of helium-3 on the moon?
They don't. There's no helium-3. This is another distortion. They have used helium for 100 years to confuse issues and to hide behind secrets they wanted to keep in the name of national security. They did this with the Germans. When the Germans needed helium for their airships, they had the Germans convinced that the only supplier for that was the United States because the only natural deposits of helium were here in the panhandle of Texas. And that was a lie because helium doesn't come from any natural deposits. It can't be held to Earth. Helium is collected as a byproduct of petroleum refining. And their trade secrets on how to catch it, how to put it in liquid form so it can be shipped. If it's not in liquid form, it's almost impossible to contain, even with the most precise hermetic seal that you can have. But if you have it in liquid form, it's more stable and more transportable. So that's a trade secret. And one of the things that they were so opposed to Japan being able to open refineries and to engage in selling gasoline with China and other countries, basically, was because they were afraid the Chinese or the Japanese would find out those trade secrets, because there's a lot more to the helium equation than you're told. And it's not a matter of some fictitious isotope of a substance that is not even an element.
Okay, well, now you've just pointed out something that I think is very important, and it's parallel with what's going on with this space race. And that is what you've just pointed out about helium is that there's the public story, and then the reason that the U.S. didn't want Japan to get into oil refining was not because of oil or gasoline, but because of the byproduct, helium.
Yes.
All right. When we come back from this break, I'm going to suggest a reason we might not want China going to the moon. We'll be back right after this.
There are no laws of physics. Here's Kevin Smith.
That's absolutely correct. I did tell Dr. Michio Kaku that there are no laws of physics. And I think, James, you were probably listening to the show that night.
Can I contradict you?
Well, what I said to him
was... There are a lot of wrong laws of physics.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I said to him is they're just descriptions of our current understanding, and that's subject to change. But anyway, that's another discussion. But yes, indeed, that did happen. Welcome, those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. We're glad you're here, and my sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from that first hour. We're talking about the moon, the space race that's on, and involving the moon. And we're talking with James Horak, getting his input on this as well. Now, James, I said that what you told us about Japan, when they wanted to begin refining oil and making gasoline, you said the U.S. opposed that. And the reason was that the byproduct of that process is helium. And it was a trade secret. America didn't want anybody to know it, and so that's why they opposed it. So for whatever reasons they gave for why they were opposing it, the real reason was this byproduct of the process. Okay.
Yes.
Now, I asked you earlier, I mean, there's all this talk about helium-3 being all over the moon, and this article I'm looking at right here, let me see if I can tell where it's from. I'm not sure what publication this one's from, but it's entitled, Is Helium-3 Exploitation China's Hidden Lunar Agenda? And in this article, it says, this is the guy who's in charge of their moon program, China's moon program. This is him talking, and this is a quote from him. There are altogether 15 tons of helium-3 on Earth, while on the moon the total amount of helium-3 can reach 1 to 5 million tons, end quote. And I ask you, how do they know that? How do they know, first of all, that there is helium-3 on the moon, perhaps from some of the samples they brought back? Okay, I can buy that. How do they know that there's from 1 to 5 million tons?
If it existed.
If it existed, okay. Now, here's the point. Do you remember I started off with the moon rang like a bell?
Yes.
And do you remember I then talked about that China plans to map every inch of the surface of the moon with high definition 3D.
Yes. Interesting, isn't it?
Is it possible that the helium-3 issue is thrown into that mix like all the reasons that we gave for why we didn't want Japan to be refining oil, but the real reason was we don't want you to know the trade secret that helium is a byproduct of that. Is it possible that helium-3 is thrown into this, and so people are believing there's helium-3 just laying all over the ground up there, when perhaps there's not, and they're opposing China's exploitation of helium-3 because they really don't want them going up there and mapping everything. Now, are they opposing China doing this? Well, slightly. Slightly.
Well, it's a cover. It's a cover on China's side, and it's a cover on the U.S.'s side and anybody else. They don't want you to know that they want a hotel moon. I want a place to run to when things get too tough here.
Okay, now let's go back to what was said in that original article about the Grail mission. The Grail mission This was said prior to 2008. It was published prior to 2008 that the GRAIL mission is a support mission. It's in support of America's return to lunar exploration, manned exploration. Okay, well, that sounds good. But now that we're not going back, and I brought this up on the air, okay, now that we're not going back to the moon, why are we still doing the GRAIL mission? Why, when the moon got canceled, and this is supposed to be a support mission for manned exploration of the moon, when manned exploration of the moon got canceled, why didn't the GRAIL mission get canceled?
I'll tell you my take on this.
All right.
And my take on this is a cover that some good scientists have told the elite that the military operations are lying to them about the ability of the Soviet or the Russians of China and the United States being able to establish bases there, which they can't do, because these scientists have told them that they will not have the ability to survive what is coming with the underground in the underground installations they built. And of course, this was part of what was in report from Iron Mountain, and that was back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And they told them why then. But since then, other things have come into being. What's been going on with the world has created an instability. That one of the most dangerous places you can be is in some of these areas that they have established underground bases. And now they know that. They know that not only will the soil not support the oxygen that they need if they can't get any from the surface of the earth that they can use without extremely filtering it, and that process is not viable, but that there will be other pollutants from the watershed, from our aquifers, from fissures in the earth that are beginning to grow, from a lot of other things. And now they're beginning to understand in the same way that they understand some of the lunar geology and what they've acquired in the last 10 years, that the operation in Utah that I've spoken about is the only thing holding this planet together right now. So if they do what they're doing, and what I say is true, that the EMVs will withdraw from the Earth, they'll withdraw from the Sun, then they have to assure these elite they're working for that they can house them somewhere else. And the Moon is the most likely prospect for that, and they probably enhanced a lot of their discoveries into the area of prevarication about what the moon can accommodate. They don't really know. There are areas that they want to go into to find those engines and other things that'd be disastrous for them to attempt to access.
All right. Let's talk about what we know about the moon. What we know is quite different from what we are told. We know, for instance, that we're told that there is no atmosphere. We know that there is, because astronomers right here on Earth, peering through telescopes, have seen clouds on the moon. Now, you can't have clouds if you don't have atmosphere. There is
exactly.
Atmosphere. All right, so we also know, we've been told that gravity is 1/6 of Earth's gravity. But we know from what Wernher von Braun said and from what one of the astronauts said about the null point where the gravity of the moon and the gravity of the Earth are sort of canceling each other out at that point. So a spacecraft in that point is not being pulled in either direction. Okay? That point is much further out from the moon than the official statement.
Exactly.
Which means, and I can't do these calculations. I'm a talk show host. I'm not a scientist. But we've had scientists here on the show who have done these calculations and have said that given that information, the moon's gravity is 66% of Earth's gravity.
Yeah.
Not you know, it's two-thirds, not one-sixth. And so we know that. We know there is water on the moon. The Indian Space Agency found it first. Then NASA made the big announcement that they found water on the moon when they did the La Crosse crash and splashed up water into the atmosphere. So there's water, there's atmosphere, there's gravity, a lot more gravity than what we've been told. And now, with manned exploration of the moon as a United States of America project canceled, this support mission, GRAIL, was not canceled. So here's what that leads me to think. Either it never was truly for the support of a return to manned exploration of the moon. It was that statement that they made back, I think, in 2007. That statement was just not true. It never was about that. Or it is about that, and the statement that we're not going back, that's not true. One or the other.
I think the biggest fabrication about helium-3 is that if they can get general public to think that's essential and that it requires all that it requires to develop, then they'll be able to put off the availability of cold fusion that much longer, saying it's not feasible, like they did with solar energy. Remember, there were people that were saying, I can build the solar energy for you and make it economically feasible, give you a recovery date on your expenses, and from then on, you're getting free use. And I was in a solar energy company back 25 ago. So I know that's true. Mm-hmm. Well, they're doing the same thing with cold fusion, and you don't need any isotope whatsoever to provide cold fusion.
How about that? So we don't even need helium-3 for
no.
that?
No.
Hmm.
With the people that have proven cold fusion in the laboratory at room temperatures didn't have any isotopic substance to work with. Well, I should say radioactive isotopic substance, because they're non-radioactive isotopes that they can use.
All right. Let's go back to the moon ringing like a bell and GRAIL now using gravity, the moon's gravity, against it, so to speak, to map the interior of the moon. Now, if the scientists at NASA truly believe that the interior of the moon was just sort of ho-hum like other planets, we wouldn't be mapping the interior of the moon with the exotic technology using gravity to map it. They believe there's something special about the interior of the moon, or they wouldn't be doing this mission. Like I said, if it truly was to support the return of manned exploration of the moon, if that's what GRAIL was about, to support that, then you would expect when they said, we can't afford to go back to the moon, we're canceling that, they would also have canceled that support mission. But they didn't. And it's up there now It's flying around up there, mapping the moon now. I guess it started mapping, but it's up there. It arrived on New Year's Day in orbit, and so it's there, and they're doing this. They're going to map the interior of the moon. Is it possible that they know that it's inhabited on the inside? Is it possible? Now I'm changing directions here just a little bit. Is it possible that they know that it's inhabited, that it's an occupied heavenly body on the interior, that it is artificial? And is it possible that the helium three story is the cover for why we need to go there in case once we all get there, some fighting breaks out between us and whoever's on the inside? We can justify it by saying we have to have that helium-3, a resource war, an excuse to go in. We can't say they have weapons of mass destruction because we can't photograph those from U2s. Is perhaps the helium-3 as a necessary resource is the cover for going up there and picking a fight?
Well, it wouldn't be a fight they could win.
But, I mean, I understand that sounds crazy. I understand that. But what do you think about it?
They're apt to discover something they can't even imagine, what the inside of the moon really is. And they'd be a lot better off just to leave it alone.
What do you think they'll discover?
Intergalactic spaceport.
Intergalactic spaceport?
Yep.
I mean, it's like a truck stop?
You got it. Why not?
Now, what would lead you to think that that's what it is?
Activity, I know, is going on there. The fact that until they were indulging our presence until we started weaponizing the bases.
And so what did they do about that?
Well, Dr. Berggren, in his the book that he was going to write, and I don't think he is now because after his wife died, it seemed to have taken a lot out of him. I'm not in touch with him. That's my own fault. But he has talked about this book that he wanted to write. I've seen images that he probably was going to put in them, and these images reveal what got Earth bases off of the moon and off of Mars real fast.
What was that? And,
the ET deployed a terraforming device on the equipment and landers that we were using. And this is a fungus, and it hits metal and just devours it. If this metal has certain things our metal has in it, of course, CT metal doesn't. So this is in conjunction. This is going on elsewhere in the solar system, too. Right now it's going on Jupiter. And so they just released it, you know, and said, you got a little while to get out of town. And, you know, we got it out of town. But Dr. Berggren has got images of this fungus on landers, on rovers, and on apparatus that are set up to take sensitive readings on different factors. And this stuff sets up, and in a few hours, it's covered everything and starting to devour it.
Dr. Berggren, that James is talking about, folks, is Dr. Norman Berggren. He is the author of The Ringmakers of Saturn and former NASA scientist, isn't he?
Well, JPL, mm-hmm. He's been a NASA scientist. He has held many positions within the Association of Aeronautics Science and Aeronautics out in California, very well reputed, was one of the chief images for JPL and Ames. When he published his books, it was based on raw data that he was developing and putting in context as a scientist when he was working at Ames. And so that's what his book is based on. It's an excellent book. And in it, he defines what astrophysicists had avoided, and puts it in a context that's very close to reality, and furthers many notions of exactly what we have in our system, our solar system, and what is necessary to maintain the stability of our sun and what in many ways provides the seedbed for life to a fledgling system.
Okay, so he has these photographs, and you've seen them, and these are photographs that show our technology on the moon being eaten up by this fungus, right?
Right, right.
Now, were these photographs kind of up-close photographs?
Yeah, I doubt that the cameras that took them was 12 feet away.
Did he say to you how he came by these photographs?
He got them from people where he worked. He had access to everything because he was an imagist.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't. I think he probably had them for a while before he showed them to anyone, but... My suggestion to him and his associate Casey Dawkus was to go very easy on him because the revelation of the EMVs was more important at the time, and I felt that if he threw this in there, mm-hmm. that would have a tendency to be too much, and that it would harm. The getting the reality of the EMVs out, and at the time he didn't acknowledge that they were going to show up or be seen in the sun, and so when I told him they would, he pressed me for, well, how do you know this? Or how do you know this? And so I told him, and he wasn't ready for the answer, which. He's a scientist. I knew that I was cutting my throat with him when I told him.
Okay, so when he said, well, how do you know this? You told him something that scared him off, and I want to ask the question. We'll get the answer after the break. What in the world did you tell him? We'll get that answer right after this.
United Kingdom, and you are listening to the fantastic Kevin Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with James Horak, and James, when we went away for break, I asked a question. Dr. Bergeron asked you, how do you know? What's the source of your information? How do you know this? And you told him, and then he didn't want to have anything to do with you after that. What in the world did you tell him?
Told him I wasn't from here.
Well, he, being a scientist, I guess that would naturally scare him off a bit. I want to allow the audience to participate here tonight. Normally when I have a guest these days, I don't open the phone lines, but I know there are so many folks out there who want to talk with James Horak. And so we have opened the phone lines. The telephone number is 623-444-5889 if you're in the USA or Canada. If you are outside of the USA or Canada, you can call that number, or you can send me a flash message. And let's go to the telephone. If you will, tell us your first name and from where are you calling. Now, you know, it helps, caller, when I push the right buttons. Let's try it again. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Jerome.
Hi. Hi, Mr. Horak.
Hello, Jerome.
You mentioned that the EMVs are going to withdraw, and then the underground bases will be susceptible. Is that correct?
Yes.
Who controls on the moon? Okay, are the same ETs that are in control of the moon? Are they in control of these EMVs?
No.
Oh, that's
the ETs and the EMVs are separate.
Separate entities.
Yes, separate entities.
I would think that it doesn't matter that we're sending. If we were kicked off the moon already, and now we're got the Grail mission that's mapping the inside of the moon, I would imagine that the ETs who steered us off on the moon in the first place do not care that we are doing this. Do you have any opinion on that?
They don't care as long as there's no attempt to access the inside of the moon. They don't care.
And then I would say the same would be with China going up and putting HD pictures. They don't care about that either.
No, they don't care.
I don't think even if China gets the pictures, I think the Indians already probably, since they had a mission up there, the Russians, I think we all have it. Nobody's going to show the general populace, you know, those pictures.
You do have a group here who are civilized that have made contact with ETs, and when they feel comfortable about it, they'll disclose that.
Do you think the ETs in our underground bases are the same ETs that are in the moon?
No. They're EBs, extra biological entities, and they're problematic.
Mm. And do you think that these two might be the warring factions that we hear about in the space wars?
Well, there are no warring factions from off Earth. Even the EBs, they're problematic. They're not hostile, but they can cause a lot of problems, which they have. And they're being used because their craft are being used for different things by the military. And in order to operate the craft, an EB has to pilot them.
Oh, that's interesting. And then also, with the Mars missions, who do you think actually shot down the Phobos 2?
You're talking about the one that was back in the 80s, the one that was going, the probe that was going by Phobos and
yes,
got intercepted?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
That was an EMV. In fact, there's a videotape of that a Soviet cosmonaut, a lady, brought with her when she defected from the Soviet Union. And it shows, it's been on 2020, I think. It's been on television, on the mainstream documentary, showing the shadow coming over Phobos. And then you see this incredibly bright light, and then the probe is gone.
As far as cold fusion, do you think it's ever going to be let known as a viable option?
Oh, yes. It's here now. There have been a number of physicists demonstrate it. The principle, the difficulty in comprehending it comes about from the error of separating chemistry and physics.
Do you think that would cause a paradigm shift when we get free energy then, and then the oil companies won't have, you know, their take?
Well, it would be a threat to the status quo, to power placement, to the cartels. Who gives a damn?
I agree with that. Kevin on a previous show mentioned that if we had free energy, I don't want to take words out of your mouth, Kevin, but that it would be too much for you know, the populace to handle all at once. I think that was the phrase.
Yeah, what I said is if they transitioned pretty much overnight, it would kill the economy of the entire planet. But they could transition it in an orderly manner and not kill the economy.
Well, that's what you'd expect. That's common sense. I mean, mm-hmm. you want to do it as in the least harmful manner. I mean, it's not necessary to destroy people. That's the powers that be's method of doing things, but that shouldn't be. Yeah, if you want to be better than your opponent, you don't adopt your opponent's ways.
I understand what you're saying. That's very insightful. One last question, and I'll leave other callers call in. Kevin, you had Jeff Harvey on, and I didn't get an opportunity to call in that night. And he mentioned that there was a thing where the Navy was versus the Army and the Air Force. I don't know if he said it or he alluded to Robert Morningstar or somebody. Mr. Horak, do you know where what I'm implying here?
Oh yes, and I think that there are elements within, deep within naval intelligence that have formed or have begun, have spearheaded a faction too now for some time, and I think. The fact that we have the video, STS-48, is a proven example of that, that they want things to get out that nobody else does, and that they actively oppose the New World Order, which any conscionable person should. Yeah, I think that's what we're talking about, but I don't see any reason why there aren't elements within all the military, and I think that's going to increase, and the military may be the solution to what's going on now.
Well, thank you, Mr. Horak, for your insight, and thank you, Kevin, for being so patient with my question.
Well, you're certainly welcome. We're delighted you called.
Thank you, Jerome.
The telephone lines will remain open. If you want to call, you may. The number's on the screen for those who are watching. For those who are listening, it is 623-444-5889. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Hello, Brent.
Hey, James, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
Just fine. Now, I've said this before on Kevin's show, and I'm going to say it again, and I want your take on it. The powers that want to be are so into their power games that they would rather die than give us free energy or clean up the environment or anything else. Now, I have said that these people are not only guilty of crimes against humanity, but crimes against every living organism on this planet. What would you say to that?
I'd have to agree. I think after the Gulf of Mexico fiasco, and after Fukushima, I don't think that leaves much doubt.
Yeah. So what is going to be a just reward?
I think that's obvious. It might get us all in trouble if I stated it. But
yeah.
I think that's obvious. We all have, as human beings, when we are ourselves, we all have a healthy sense of outrage. And to know that our children's future is in deep jeopardy, should be enough to arouse any conscionable human being to a sense of outrage.
Now, here's another question for you. Kevin has, last night even, Kevin said that there are more geniuses in China than there are people in the United States. Now, the powers that want to be have this slight problem. They love to dumb down the United States for some reason, through chemical means, through media means, whatever. I just get the feeling they're shooting themselves, shooting the American people in the foot, because if they gave people credit for what their intelligence, we could be a whole heck of a lot farther along than we are. Just your thoughts.
Well, my thoughts are that the American people are a sleeping giant, and that when they start growing hungry, they've lost their jobs, they've suffered from the policies of globalist domination, and I think when it gets a little worse, we're going to see the spirit. And we're going to see the direction, and we're going to see the outrage that beat the British twice, and that has done some aggressive things in the past, but, you know, has had a spirit of human decency, too, in almost all their endeavors. And I think our exploits are fairly balanced compared to other very strong nations. I think that we benefited very early on from an industrial revolution, and we tried to share that with the world. It was the corporations and their greed and their corruption of our government that turned us away from Manifest Destiny and from another number of other goals that could have been applied far more nobly than they were.
Okay, Brent, I want to thank you for the call. Excellent questions.
You always ask them.
Yeah. The phone lines remain open. If you wish to call, you may. And James Horak and I are continuing. These additional pieces to the space race certainly provide a different, if a bit more warped, picture than what we had back in 2008. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Rusty, you want to hang on through the break?
Sure.
All right. You hang in there and we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are talking this evening with Mr. James Horak, and we've been talking about the moon. On the telephone from Michigan is Rusty. Okay, Rusty, I had to go straight to a break. It took over just as you called, so the floor is yours.
All right. Hello, James.
Oh, you know what, Rusty? We have James turned way down here. James.
All right.
All right, he said hello, James.
How are you?
Very good. Talking about what they're doing with the moon, and then you put together some of the underground bunkers and some exploration going on there, do you think that the powers that be that have these underground facilities, if they can't live in those, and they may have to go off-world, you think they're planning on using the moon? Or do you think, I kind of was thinking that there's a possibility that they may try to move it if it's some kind of a ship.
No. What I think is that they are trying to represent this to the elite, their bosses, to give them a false sense of security, mainly to avoid facing the horrible truth, the horrible reality that, you know, you go to mad people, you go to someone that's just totally self-obsessed with themselves, think they're superior than everyone else, and you tell them what they don't want to hear, what do? The messenger? So what they got this, well, we're working on being able to reestablish ourselves on the moon or whatever, hoping that these scientists that are advising the elite more directly don't figure that out and tell them, well, you know, we can't establish ourselves on the moon because the people that are already there don't want us there, and they have whatever is needed to keep us off.
Okay. Now, is there some other, I think he's talking iridium that they're saying may be on the moon, and you indicated that it is not. Was that correct?
You mean iridium? Did you say iridium?
Yeah, he's asking what was it that you said is not on the moon that they say is there, and it was helium-3.
Helium-3, oh. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, there's iridium there.
Oh, there is iridium there.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's iridium there.
And that's what is needed to create this fusion?
No, helium-3 is what they're saying.
No. Okay.
And they don't need helium-3 for cold fusion.
We didn't mention iridium at all.
Oh, okay. And so why do you think that has any significance with all this happening now? Has any significance with this 2012 stuff at all?
Well, 2012 is a advantageous deadline, which they missed 2000. They had all their secret societies believing they could implement the New World Order and it's all its magnificent glory by 2000. That didn't come through. Then it was 2005. Then 2010, and so now it's 2012, and they got this in line with all these, the Mayan calendar and all this other stuff, and you know how they've mixed in Planet X or Nibiru, I don't know, because that's not even in agreement with Sitchin's prediction of when Nibiru would come through our area. It's not due for another 900 years, according to his schedule. But, that you know, what's a matter of detail? So, yeah, I think that 2012 is, it may be their do-or-die point. So, you know, they'll either they'll go one way or they'll fizzle out. I don't think they'll recover from not being able to get it done by the end of this year.
Okay, well I think that would be a good thing, but
I do.
One more question here. Kevin was talking early on about some things that you guys were noticing in the skies that were different, and I think you mentioned one or two things. Can you name some? I'm kind of a novice at, like, when I look up there and what, you know, different things should be in place. What is it that I could notice if I looked up there?
Well, what I would recommend you do is what I've got, the software I've got is Planetarium Gold, and I've had it for a number of years. And what it does is that you merely put in what your position is. And you can, it's close enough to, like, if it's with me, it's Fort Worth, Texas. And you put the date and the time, and say, I would always do this at dark so you can see the stars and the planets. And type in, and it'll tell you exactly what the fix should be on the sky at that time, at that location, at that date. So if you go out and you compare it at that time, and you're staying out there, and it's not right, you know right away something's wrong.
Well, what do you think accounts for that?
I think that they have created rifts in time. They have disrupted time. This affects astral alignments and other things, but not permanently. It's fixed back because there are people that fix these things as they happen. So, you know, the hydrogen bomb does tremendous damage to the continuum. And so there are people that fix it back. It's not something I can explain to you how they do it, but they do. Because if they didn't, then things would start, bad things would start happening.
Okay. All right. That's all I have. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thanks for the call, Rusty. We have time probably for one more really quick call. If you were to call, like, right now, then we could take your call. But once we get a minute or two down the road, it'll be too late for that. James, I said earlier that, you know, when we throw these other pieces of the puzzle on the table, it really makes the picture warped, but it's at least a bigger picture. And, you know, I appreciate you for coming on and talking with us and kind of examining the picture with us a little bit here this evening. Let's take this final call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, it's Heidi from Manitoba.
Hello, Heidi.
Hello.
Hello, Heidi.
Hi there, James. Yeah, James, I think you were first on the Kevin Smith Show about 2 years ago. And at the time you said that if humanity's direction didn't change immediately, that the EMVs would begin their, I guess you could call it, reformatting of the planet. And since you said that, like, what's happened in these past 2 years? Any change?
Well, what I said precisely was that once that they start this program of depopulation, then the EMVs will withdraw. And it's over. So, this isn't an aggressive or hostile act, because the inevitability from that point on is to create in short order a world where no one will want to live.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sad thing. I've done everything that I could to keep this from happening. I don't know what more I can do.
Mm-hmm. All right, Heidi, we're going to have to say goodbye and thank you for the call, because we are just out of time. James, once again, thank you for being with us this evening.
Anytime, my friend.
All right, you stay on the line with me for just a moment, and we'll chat once I bring this in for a landing. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. I hope you've enjoyed the show, and I hope you'll be back tomorrow night. Bring friends with you. Hey, bring enemies. Make it fun. My friends generally call me Steel Eye, and my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.